And now let's go to a country that's finding out what comes after a revolution. Egypt is in the early stages of a presidential campaign. The candidates include Mohamed El-Baradei. For years, he was the chief nuclear watchdog at the United Nations. That work, which earned him a Nobel Peace Prize, is now the subject of his new memoir. It comes out even as he campaigns for president. In what way, Mr. El-Baradei, are you working to build support right now, political support?
Well, I'm basically focusing, Steve, right now on making sure that we have a democratic infrastructure, a proper democratic constitution, a proper parliament, democratically elected, giving time for the parties to establish themselves after the revolution, making sure that the presidential election will be again similarly democratic. But at the same time, I'm talking to people, engaging people, telling them what the future of Egypt should look like. But my main focus right now is to make sure that everything is set for a new Egypt, if you like, because I made it clear that I would only run if there is a proper democratic system in place.
So it is not definite that you will run?
For now, I am running, but I'll have to keep my options open, because if anything were to happen contrary to my conviction, then I do not want, obviously, to be part of a decor.
Did you say don't want to be part of the decor?
Yeah.
As you travel about, do you feel that Islamists are gaining more power and influence day by day?
Well, I think they are now the only organized force, so they are gaining ground, while the other parties, the parties of the young people and other who made the triggered the revolution, are just about starting their own parties. And that's also one of the reasons I believe that having the election in September is way too soon, because you would not have a level playing field at that time. The new parties are not yet fully engaged.
Now, let me ask you about this book, which I'll mention is called The Age of Deception, and it covers what I guess we can now think of as your previous life, running the International Atomic Energy Agency at a really momentous period involving Iraq, the U.S. invasion of Iraq, the Iran issue. You were working on issues relating to Libya, relating to North Korea. And if I may, there seems to be a common theme of disappointment. You were disappointed in how almost all these situations turned out. What do those disappointments have in common?
All the disappointment, Steve, has in common that we never really looked at the big picture. There was always a sense of condescending on the part of the U.S. in particular, and during the Bush administration, that these countries have to buckle under pressure, where I knew that they will not buckle under pressure because it had to do with their security. There were, in many cases, particularly in Iran, the demand that Iran should be completely undressed before the U.S. sit with them around the negotiating table. So I saw lots of conflict that had to do with war and peace that could have been easily resolved.
You think that the United States could have reached an agreement with this Iranian regime? Because, as you know, there are plenty of American foreign policy specialists who are dubious that really the Iranians ever want an agreement.
Well, I disagree with that, at least based on my experience. Of course, there was a number of situations where they were bypassed by the U.S. insistence that Iran should not have one single centrifuge running. And that was obviously not realistic, Steve. However, even we were very close during the Obama administration, and Mr. Ahmadinejad personally was very much interested in having a comprehensive package with Iran. But again, unfortunately, that chance was lost because on the Iranian domestic situation, people were in a more payback mode after the election in Iran.
Let me just clarify what you're saying here, though, because you're saying that there were many missed opportunities because the Bush administration insists that Iran give up everything before talks began.
That's correct. Then
the Obama administration did talk with Iran, did seem to reach an agreement, at least with Iranian diplomats, and the Iranian government backed away from that agreement. Does that suggest that really there wasn't that much room to have a negotiation to begin with?
No, Iran was in the aftermath of the presidential election in Iran, and
disputed election, yeah.
And then Ahmadinejad was not able to go ahead with the agreement because his detractors were after him, saying he was selling the store, blah, blah. So he couldn't go forward with it. But by that time, the Obama administration was really has its hands, you know, full with domestic issues and could not engage Iran as they were able to 6 months before.
Are you suggesting that after making an effort which didn't work out very well in the early part of his administration, President Obama more or less forgot about Iran or was distracted by other issues and wasn't able to pay full attention?
I don't think he was distracted, but I think the domestic political situation did not give him the freedom, the elbow room, to be able to negotiate with Iran.
Is the nonproliferation system that has been designed for decades to prevent more nations from getting nuclear weapons broken?
Yeah, it is broken, I think, Steve. You know, this was a system that was built in 1970. Lots of things happened in the last 40 years. Lots of countries now have the ability to develop nuclear weapons or have the know-how to develop nuclear weapons. So the weapon states need to send the message loud and clear, and not just a message, but act on it, walk the walk, that they are moving toward a world free from nuclear weapons. If you are not going to do that, in the long term, you cannot have a system of security based on nuclear haves and nuclear have-nots. The system of security based on nuclear deterrence is an absolute way to self-destruct.
Mohammed Alberdai is the author of The Age of Deception, and he is also, at least for now, a presidential candidate in Egypt. Thanks very much.
Thank you very much, Steve, for having me.